Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back here on the program once again Larry Keller. He's the owner of Wild Birds Incorporated. That's a store in Champaign where he sells feeders and birdhouses and bird seed and all manner of birding supplies for people who are interested in watching birds and learning about birds and welcoming them to their yard. And he knows a lot about birds, and every once in a while he's here on the program, and that's what we talk about, what's going on with birds and how they live their lives. And it is an opportunity for people to talk about the birds that they have seen. Maybe you've seen something, you just like to call in and say that you saw it, or you have some questions about what you've seen. He'll see if he can answer whatever questions you have. And we've just been talking here about the fact that now this is a very good time to see birds because migration is going on, and there are a lot of beautiful birds that are passing through. And if you give them something to eat, they just might hang out in your yard for a day or two, and you can enjoy them. Questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being
here. Good morning.
I appreciate it. This is a great time to see birds, and we were just chatting here before we got going that just at our house in southeast Urbana, over the past 10 days or so, we've been seeing a lot of birds, adders that we have, things that it's not that they're rare, but I'm not used to seeing them, and to look out and see, as I have seen out my dining room window, to see indigo bunting or goldfinches or grosbeak, just things we've seen in the last few days. It's really wonderful to see, and it's almost a little startling. When we had the end of last week, we were seeing goldfinches, in which we don't usually see. And I was standing there and looking out and thinking, aren't these beautiful birds? And I happened to look down on the ground and saw a bunting, indigo bunting. And only one other time in the last about 18 years have I seen one outside our house. So I thought that was particularly exciting. So it's a good time. You ought to be looking, because if you do, you're going to see them.
Right, yeah. We're getting real close to the peak of migration. And when we talk about the spring migration, we're talking about the birds, the neotropicals that are coming up from Central and South America, making their way up all the way up into Canada even for nesting and spending the spring and summertime up here before the migration reverses and comes back through. And the spring migration is very special because everybody's in their breeding plumage. The birds are very active. They're very vocal also. So people notice them a lot more during the spring migration than they do the fall migration. And this is the time of year that our phones light up and people are calling, what is this? And you're seeing all your warblers coming through. The grosbeaks are coming through now. The indigo buntings that you mentioned are coming through. And right now, I would say in about another week will be peak. And any time that you're seeing these south winds like we had last week, the real high south winds, we'll start to see birds being pushed into this area. So really the migration starts mid-April or so and goes through the end of May is the peak migration time. And depending on what type of feeders, what type of seed presentation you put out in your yard, what type of water features you have, you'll be able to enjoy those birds right in your yard. And it doesn't matter where you live. If you've got trees, you're going to see these migrants coming through at some point in time.
Yeah. And that, I suppose that's something to keep in mind if you're wanting to put out water for them. And that's important because they do need water,
right,
or seed. You also got to give them some cover. It's kind of more difficult for them if you want to put out a feeder or something like that. And it's out in the middle of a very open place.
Right, yeah. It's not safe. The birds realize that predation is always on their mind, of course. If they don't have the cover, they're not going to come to that area. And a lot of your neotropicals, such as your warblers, they're insect eaters. So you're not going to necessarily see them at a feeder. Certain circumstances you can, but primarily they're insect eaters. They're up in the trees, they're in the bushes and the shrubs feeding that way. But if you have water out, you're definitely going to see those birds with the water features.
Mm. Well, we have a caller to start us off, and let's do that. Someone here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, and line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I don't know if you can help me or not, but every morning around, I'm thinking it's around 5:30. It's before the sun's up. It's at the very beginning of dawn, and there's a beautiful sound that is kind of a trilling kind of a sound, and I keep looking out the window to see if I can find the birds, but I can't, and I just wondered what might be up that early and trilling, having a really beautiful trilling kind of a sound. I'm used to the morning doves, but this is really different, And maybe you can give me some hints as what to look for, where they might be. They almost sound like they're under the house eaves, even. So, we're upstairs, and I look out the window, and I can't see anything, but the sound is so close by.
Right.
So
one of the first birds that you'll hear in the morning, such as you're describing, it can start as early as 4:35 in the morning. In this area, this time of year for springtime, are the American robins. The robins have their melody song in the morning, and then they're one of the last birds that you'll hear in the evening going to roost. And that's okay. One of the very first ones you're going to hear in the morning.
Okay.
And more than likely, that's the one. It's kind of a long, drawn-out melody-type sound.
Okay.
It seems to keep going and going and
forever.
Going. And, right. And you'll hear multiple ones doing the same sound all over the area.
Exactly.
Yeah, those are the American robins singing.
Okay. And now they were talking about, or David maybe was talking about putting water out.
Right.
But you said undercover of what?
Well, no, not necessarily undercover, but near cover.
Under a tree?
Yeah, bushes, trees, and shrubs. Any place, yeah. The birds that we're attracting to our yard, one of the biggest concerns for them and that what you want to make sure that doesn't occur is aerial predation from hawks primarily. That's one of the biggest predations. And if you've got cover close to where your feeding stations are or your water feature, that is going to allow those birds to escape that predation. And they're going to feel more secure, and as a result, you're going to see more birds in your yard.
Okay.
Okay.
And then as far as the kind of seed at this point, or what kind of feeding is best, now I'll go ahead and hang up and just listen in.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Feeding this time of year, there is a very large variety of feeding. Of course, you have your hummingbird feeders with the sugar water. You have oriole feeders, which are very species-specific feeders that the orioles will feed on. They like the sugar water also. They love grape jelly and orange halves. So there's certain particular feeders on the market that you can use for that. A lot of ground feeding this time of year with millet base, either straight millet or mixes that have a lot of millet for the different song sparrows, the white-throated sparrows, white-crowned sparrows. The towhees are coming in right now. So they'll feed at the ground level. Niger thistle in the thistle feeder for the goldfinches and the indigo bunnings. They will feed on that very heavily. In your platform feeders or your hopper feeders, safflower is a real good one this time of year. The grosbeaks that are going to be moving in here real soon love the safflower. Your cardinals eat the safflower very well. The nice thing about the safflower is the grackles and the blackbirds tend not to eat it. So you don't have those guys manipulating a feeder and draining your feeder in a 5 minutes time period. So that's a really nice seed to have this time of year.
And just in case when I was talking about cover, we were talking about cover, in case people just aren't really sure,
right.
Just what we're just talking about is putting your feeder in a place where there's trees around there or bushes or shrubs or something so that if the birds at all feel threatened, they've got some place that they can close by that they can fly to where they'll be sheltered.
Right. Yeah. There's four primary things that you want to have: food, water, habitat or shelter, and also housing. In certain species, of course, in your yard, you can put birdhouses out and attract them for nesting purposes also.
All right. On to other callers. Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign, and this would be line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm on your program late, so forgive me if this question's already been asked.
That's fine.
Last week or so, I saw some really, really large birds flying over southwest or Champaign or Urbana, I'm sorry. And I've seen the birds on the Illinois-Indiana border, but I've never seen them in Illinois, actually. I always thought they were turkey vultures. Can you tell
right.
me what those birds are?
Yeah, that's primarily this time of year you'll see a lot of turkey vultures moving around. They're moving back up into the area, catching the south wind and the warm thermals that are up there. You'll see them all over the place. I've been noticing them really heavily here the last couple weeks. So this time of year, if you're seeing a very large, dark bird flying, does a lot of gliding, very little flapping, that's going to be the turkey vulture moving in.
Okay.
Okay.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think, is it fair to say that probably around here that's the biggest bird that you're going to see?
Primarily, yes. Yeah, you've got basically three large ones. You've got the great blue herons. People will see them flying a lot of times. Mm-hmm. They're very distinguishable because their legs are hanging out back, so that's very easy to see. The turkey vulture is one of the biggest ones. And then with the populations of the bald eagles nowadays, we still have bald eagles nesting around east central Illinois and pretty much throughout the whole state of Illinois anymore. So it's very possible to see them still.
Yeah. What's the wingspread of a turkey vulture?
Oh, you know? Boy. Yeah,
it really is a big – the first time I saw one, I thought, thought, what is that? Because obviously it was a very
depending,
big bird.
Depending, you can go 4 to 6 feet probably is a pretty a good estimate.
Yeah. And that was one, I think maybe we've talked about this before, that I read at some point that that was a bird that was really being affected by, in a lot of places, by loss of habitat, and that it was one that people were starting to see and were being told, don't be surprised if you start to see more turkey vultures in urban areas.
Right, yeah. They're becoming very adaptive, and you are seeing them in urban areas, and they're getting more and more used to people to the point where we've had some cases where people have had nests of turkey vultures in areas where you wouldn't think that they would be in somebody's backyard, actually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're one of those species that they play a very important role in the environment, an extremely important role, actually. They're becoming more noticeable, and their populations, like a lot of birds of prey, are actually probably increasing. So that's why people are noticing more and more.
Okay. Belgium is next. Line 4. Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I've talked to you several times now. Mm-hmm. I'd like to bring up a couple, three, four different subjects with you real quickly. Number one, one of my favorite spots, the habitat area north of Danville, Heron Park. The winter has not been kind on Heron Park. There was a large flood. Several large trees floated in, and the boardwalk that went out into the wetlands has been damaged and is not really accessible like it used to be. Though the other areas are still open for anybody who's interested in, and it is a fabulous place to see heron, eagles, and any kind of waterfowl you can possibly imagine that is somewhat indigenous to this area, of course. You're not going to see things that are not, obviously. Just to bring that up, and it's open year-round. It closes at dark and opens at daybreak, so you need to plan yourself that way.
Right, and that's the boardwalk that's out on Newell Road off of the Lake Vermilion is where that's at. So, yeah, so people know where that's at.
Yes, sir, it is.
And if you've got the boardwalk, and then across the street there's an open area where the river goes, and back in that area is where the rookery is for the blue herons.
Yeah, the river doesn't actually go in that part.
Right.
But it is somewhat wet.
Right.
And there's a nice walk. There's places to sit. It's a beautiful little spot. Now, the next thing I wanted to bring up is if you have a turkey vulture in your yard nesting, do not get close to it.
Right.
Because they have a defensive technique that is obnoxious. They
projectile vomit.
Yeah, they puke up what they've eaten.
Yes.
And it's not nice what they eat.
Yeah, and their stomach content, that is their defense mechanism, because vultures don't get to eat every day. So when they do eat, they gorge themselves, become overweight, and they actually are above their flight weight. So they may be grounded for a while. And so, for example, a coyote comes around and he thinks he's going to get a free vulture meal. The vulture's defense technique is a projectile vomit. It is very, very nasty. It has a very high acid content. And it can even cause temporary blindness in the coyote. So that is one of their defense mechanisms. You're exactly right. That's a bird that if you see it, you're best to leave it alone, not even go close to it.
And you'll notice a lot of them are becoming people-sensitive now. They don't seem to mind you.
Right.
You'll see them along the highways, and they'll just sit there and continue eating, especially if you're out in the country.
Right.
And they don't really care. They're getting very, very adapted to people. The next thing I wanted to talk to you about is habitat, and habitat for a species of birds that we don't think too much about, and that's woodpeckers. I don't know if people have been noticing, but now you'll hear a lot of woodpeckers working on the trees and stuff, and they need dead trees to nest in and to carry on their livelihood in. And if you have woodlots or a house, if you can possibly help from knocking down a tree that is dead, or cut it back to where there's just big limbs or something like that, it really helps the woodpeckers find a place to live.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's the red-headed woodpecker, for example, in the state of Illinois. There's a lot of concern. Their numbers are dropping off. And the big problem with that is the loss of habitat, and primarily just what you said. People have a tree in their yard. There's a dead limb off the side of it. They have it cut out. By leaving that, you're providing food. You're providing nesting areas for different woodpecker species, not just the red-headed, but all the woodpecker species. And that is a big issue right now, because people who are living in areas and are sprawling out to areas where there's a lot of woods, they're going in and cutting out all the dead matter, and that's very detrimental on those species. Excellent point.
Yeah, I have a piece of property that's about 8 acres, and we have a lot of trees, and I've let it grow up. I was trying to make a prairie out of it, but trees and prairie just don't mix, and it's a horrible battle. You just can't win it. So I decided to let the trees win and bring in a lot more birds and stuff. And I happen to have a stream in it, so I have a lot of the habitat that you talk about naturally. And I see a lot of birds: pelated woodpeckers, hawks of every sort, vultures, the whole nine yards. If you let it go back to nature, you'd be surprised what comes. And it's very easy to handle that way. You don't have to feed them. You don't have to water them. You don't have to provide things for them. So people who have woodlots, please help the animals if you can.
Yep.
And that's it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
It's just in the area where I live, which is in a residential neighborhood. And now over the last couple of weeks, we've been hearing a lot of woodpeckers.
Right. Yeah. This is courtship time of year for them. So part of their courtship is the rapping. And you will hear them hammering on different items also. Sometimes places where you don't want them, such as the chimney of your house.
Yeah.
Wakes up people a lot. I've seen cases where woodpeckers have put holes into the sides of cars, and they will rap to attract a mate, and that's part of that courtship right now.
I know that in fact, the other day at one of my feeders, I saw a downy woodpecker. These are the ones that they're the little smallish.
That's the smallest one, yes.
Maybe about, they're bigger than a sparrow, but smaller than a robin, so it's sort of in that size range. But I know that I have seen, over time, I have seen
right.
others, maybe the bigger one. Maybe the one of the ones that, not a red-headed, but I'm not sure what
the red-bellied, that's another popular one that we'll see around here in urban areas also. You'll see them from time to time. Okay.
So I don't suppose from the sound you can tell what it is.
Actually, you can get a pretty good idea, yes. Yeah, because of the size and the volume of the rapping, you can actually tell. Also, there's a certain series. Certain woodpeckers have a certain series of their rapping. And, of course, they usually, especially this time of year, they're calling while they're rapping. So you can ID with the call.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And just I was thinking about the caller who was hearing a bird and was wondering what that was. One of the best ways to identify, or one of the ways you can identify birds is by the call.
Right.
And you can, there are a lot of, you can go down to the library, I'm sure, and look online. There are a lot of CDs that you can get of bird calls,
right.
And there are actually websites as well. So if you have internet access and you're interested in a particular bird, there are sites where you can go and you can put in the name of that bird and then listen to the call.
Listen to the call, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of devices. The internet's one of the easiest ways by far because it's instantaneous. You can buy CDs and learn the calls that way. People who are your best birders know their bird calls. There's no question because, like you said, they don't have to see the bird. They can hear the bird and count him, and he's there. So that is a key for this time of year with the migration coming through.
All right. Larry Keller is our guest from Wild Birds Incorporated. And if you have bird questions, give us a call, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana on line 3. Hello.
I have two things. One's about a bird call and I can't identify, and the other one's about cameras.
Okay.
We were in Bethesda, Maryland about 2 weeks ago and in north central Ohio, and I heard this bird call. I'm going to call it the Morse code bird. I didn't see it. It was too far away, but it was one tone, and I suppose you could call it a whistle. It was beep, 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 with a fair amount of more distance between the two beeps and the three beeps. And it sometimes would vary whether it was doing two or three. And I heard it in Ohio, too, both times in the morning. And I have not been able to find it to figure out what it is using. There's a set of CDs called Birding by Ear.
Right.
I looked up several birds that I knew would be in the area, and then I used my husband has handheld, or no, it's called eBirds, or handheld birds on his Palm Pilot,
right.
Which allows you to search, and it will also play the sound, the call of the bird for you.
And try looking up either the white-breasted nuthatch or the red-breasted nuthatch.
Oh, okay.
Was it near woods?
Well, Bethesda is very wooded.
Right.
And, yes, the farm has lots of...
Yeah. Play the sounds of those when you've got time and take a listen to that, and I think that's probably the birds you were listening to.
Okay, because it was more of a whistle than the nasal sound that I'm associating with nuthatches, but maybe they have a call that I'm not catching.
Well, then it might not be them. Boy, you've got me. I have no idea. That was my guess, was the nuthatches.
Yeah, it wasn't nasal at all.
Okay.
Well, I'll try those anyway in case they've got something that sounds somewhat different. And the other thing is that we invested in our first digital camera and got a Nikon D80, which is their second up digital SLR camera. And it came with a wide-angle to telephoto lens, and we took it to Nepal end of January. And several times we were taking pictures of other things and saw an interesting bird, and so we included the bird in the camera, in the picture, but the bird was really too far away to see what it was. But we discovered that we're very new to this camera, that you can get the camera, if you're taking a large file photo, you can have it on the monitor, enlarge it many, many, many times, and see a really good shot of the bird that you thought you wouldn't be able to tell what it was.
Right.
We saw a kingfisher that way, so that landed on a building ledge, and then we were up north of the Annapurnas, and we saw huge birds that turned out to be Himalayan griffins, which are a kind of vulture with nice, broad, creamy wings and black flight feathers. They're really quite spectacular looking, but we couldn't get close enough to them to see the details until I enlarged them with the camera. So if people are trying to figure out what kind of camera to buy and they want to spring the bucks, I'm sure that there are other brands that do something similar, but when we bought the camera, we weren't aware of that feature, and it was really quite nice to be able to zoom in and see clearly what the bird was. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We're about midway through here this hour, Focus 580 with Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated. And if you have questions about birds that you've seen or things that you can do to attract birds to your yard, give us a call. We have some other folks here, a couple of Champaign callers, and the next is on line number one. Hello.
Yay, that's me.
Yeah.
I have a question about a bird call.
Okay.
I heard it last week, and I could see the bird early in the morning. The light wasn't clear enough to see the color, but I thought it was gray or brown. But the way I could describe the sound was a honking, but a high-pitch honking. And every time he honked, his whole body would move. And I have a little handheld apparatus that I bought at your store, and I tried to put the cards in. None of them had a honking. And it was like, honk, 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 but really high pitch. It had a long, pointed beak, and I'd say about the size of a robin, but more slender.
Was the bird on the ground or in the bushes? Or?
It was up in the top of black walnut tree, up at the very top.
Probably a northern mockingbird. Try playing that. Now, they have a very large vocalization, so I would get online and play different sounds that they have. But they're showing up more and more in the Champaign-Urbana area.
Uh-huh.
And they're one of the birds. You've got northern mockingbirds and brown thrashers that'll go up to the top of the trees early in the morning, and they've got a very large vocalization. So try those two and see if that's the ones.
And my other question is, why don't you carry any more of those cards for that apparatus? I've tried to buy more to learn more varieties of birds, and you don't carry that anymore.
Like anything else with technologies, there's something bigger and better out right now that's coming out.
I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah, that we're going to be carrying that. Yeah. You can go online and order those, though. That's not a problem. Yeah. They've got, or to call their 800 number to order more.
Okay.
Okay.
And I just wanted to thank the fellow who called about leaving the dead limbs in the trees. We have either Chinese elm or Siberian elm, and that's the nature of the tree. They always have dead limbs. And when we first moved here 20 years ago, I had them cut out, but now I leave them, and I've got those little downy woodpeckers
the
time.
Yep, makes a big difference.
So, okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You. And another Champaign person. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how I can continue to attract birds and, if possible, maybe even have less sparrows and blackbirds, because I live in a neighborhood where we get just massive infestation almost of sparrows, so that the yard can become unpleasant. They can just cover the whole yard, and then we also get lots and lots of blackbirds.
Now, are you feeding birds right now?
No.
Okay.
I stopped.
But the problem was occurring because you were feeding and getting those species in?
Well, no. I actually moved to a different location, and up around Bradley Avenue, I guess, off and on for years, they have had just massive amounts of birds.
Right. You know, the blackbird species, as a general term, you'll get the massive migration flocks, especially you'll notice them in September, October.
Right.
That's one of the large periods of time. There's really nothing you can do except for wait for them to move out of the area. Short of cutting all the trees down, there's nothing you can do to discourage them. People have tried everything imaginable, firecrackers, water cannons, everything to try to spook them out, and it's just not going to work. Now, as far as sparrows, they thrive in the urban setting. That's just where they live. And here in Champaign-Urbana, we've got a monstrous population. As far as discouraging them from your yard, the biggest thing is if you're feeding birds, you want to make sure you're feeding seeds that are not attractive to those birds. And also you want to eliminate nesting areas, holes in the side of a building. Swing sets are big areas where sparrows tend to nest. So if you're eliminate the areas where these birds are going to nest, you're definitely going to eliminate the number of those birds in your yard.
Okay. And what seeds would be good that sparrows wouldn't like?
The house sparrows will feed on just about anything that you put out. A couple things that are very helpful: if you feed the Niger thistle in an upside-down finch feeder, that's going to allow the goldfinches to feed, but your house sparrows cannot feed off that feeder. Also, stay away from corn and millets and black oil sunflower. Those seeds will attract either the blackbirds and the sparrows in high numbers. So if you stay with safflower seed, primarily you can do that year-round. It's a very high-energy seed, and a lot of birds will feed on that. That'll help eliminate those numbers, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. Next, we'll talk with somebody in Tuscola, line 3.
I wondered if the hummingbirds are back yet. I put just a small amount in my feeder and have one feeder out and wondered if they'd arrived yet.
Yes, they have. We've had them now for just about 2 weeks in the areas when we've had reports. So they're starting to show up. I would say next week we'll start to see the big push of them starting to show up.
Well, I had literally over 100 last year.
Excellent.
With four feeders,
yep.
And I kept pretty busy making my mix. So
was that during the fall migration?
August,
September.
Yeah, that's when I had the most, but right. Had them all summer long.
Good, yeah. You'll start seeing them back in the next week or so.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about nesting platforms for red-tail hawks. Could you address that at all?
Right. There are hawk structures that you can put out. Basically, they look like a triangle on a high pole. And you'll see different, and a lot of people who've been around water, especially like down in Florida, you'll notice osprey platforms.
Right.
And that's a very similar type of a deal. You can put those out. The success rates are not real high with red-tailed hawks. Red-tailed hawks a lot of times will use a tree area to build their nest in, and they use old nest a lot of times and add structure to it. One of the more interesting areas I've seen them nest was at the U of I softball field a couple years ago on one of the light structures. So those,
really?
So that type of height is what we're talking about. So sometimes if you're putting a pole out that's 20, 30 feet high, you might get them, but it's tough. It's very, very tough.
Well, we put one up that's 35 feet high.
Okay.
And
you got the right height. That's the key, is the height with those.
We just put it up in February, thinking we might attract them because we do have several red-tailed hawks, and I just wondered what the chances were of attracting one.
You're doing everything correctly as far as putting up the habitat for them, and then it's completely up to them to use it. So don't be surprised if it goes a few years, you don't see anything, and then one day, bang, you've got a pair there.
Well, we did weave some structure in the platform, thinking that might help. Well, we'll be patient then and wait.
Good. And once you do get a pair that nest, they will probably come back year after year, either them or the fledglings will. So they tend to use the same areas for nesting year after year.
Well, we have windbreaks, and we have them here all, pretty much year-round, except now I noticed nesting time, they're not here right now.
Right.
So we did see them on the structure, and they didn't adopt it for the residents, I guess I'd say.
Have to wait till next year now, probably.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Right, thank you. And again, we'll go to another caller. This is someone in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hi. I was looking out my back window the other day, and I saw a bird out in the distance. I couldn't really identify by markings, but it was a brilliant red, and I thought immediately of a cardinal. But then it was so red, I thought maybe it's a scarlet tanager. Are there tanagers here?
Yes. Yeah, we get two species of tanagers that come through. This is the time of year that you're going to see them.
Ah.
You've got the summer tanager, who is all red. You can also see some orange or yellow markings on them and on the younger birds. And then the scarlet tanager's got the pure black wings and pure red body. Yep.
Yeah, this was I hadn't seen a tanager since I was a boy growing up in Connecticut, and it was just really quite a thrill.
Yeah, that's one that if you happen to be looking in the right location at the right time, you're going to see them.
Yeah.
Occasionally, you might see them on the jelly feeders where the orioles will feed at. I've had situations where that's occurred. Also at water features, any type of bird bath or something, you might see them there also.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks
for the call.
Thank you. I told you earlier that it was last summer in our yard we saw a tanager, and that's the first time that I had ever seen one. And now that I think about it, it was around where we have a bird bath, so maybe that was the thing. And they're just stunningly beautiful, and I've seen pictures of them, but that was the first time that I'd ever actually
right,
seen
yeah,
one.
Right, yeah, and once you get the sunlight on, the picture does them no justice. Oh, they're yeah. just a beautiful. They put a cardinal to shame is what
yeah,
I say.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, and cardinals are beautiful birds, right. Absolutely.
Right.
But this was a much different order of intensity of the red.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Well, again, questions are certainly welcome. We have about 20 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Larry Keller from Wild Birds Incorporated. And if you have questions about birds that you've seen or attracting them to your yard, call us 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. How often should you clean your feeders?
On a general rule of thumb, once a month. And that means take them down, warm soapy water, clean them very well, a very, very mild bleach water solution to disinfect, and then let them dry completely before you put seed back in. Now, when we're talking nectar feeders, they should be cleaned every 3 to 4 days. You're dealing with sugar water. That's going to grow bacteria, mold, and fungus in those areas. So you want to make sure that nectar is thrown out, clean it, warm soapy water once again, and refill with fresh nectar. So that's the key there. So hummingbird feeding is not for everybody. It is somewhat labor intense because you're constantly every 3 or 4 days having to take it down, clean it, put new nectar in, that sort of thing. The rewards are great, though.
Yeah. Oh, so it's a pretty spectacular
right.
thing. I remember some years back in one of the houses that we lived, we had a canna, which has a very, very bright red flower.
Right.
And that's one of the colors that they're attracted to. And it was outside of the window of our kitchen. And I just looked one day and suddenly there was a hummingbird. And it was just the most amazing thing
right.
to see.
Yep.
Well, again, questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Oh, I guess I was also going to ask in connection with the feeding of the hummingbirds. Is there something that you can do for your feeders, either what you put in them or what they look like, that will then discourage wasps and nectar-feeding insects?
Right. There's a lot of feeder designs out on the market. There is a lot of bad designs on the market. And when I say bad, I mean gravity-fed feeders are not great because the nectar is right at the hole, so that allows insects to feed off of them very easily. Also, stay away from yellow on your hummingbird feeder. Red is the primary color that's going to attract the hummingbird. The yellow is going to attract insects. There's no question. So stay away from that. There's also devices called ant traps or ant moats. They're little devices you can fill with just water. You put them above your hummingbird feeder, and that creates a moat barrier where the ants cannot get into the hummingbird feeder. So that's another big problem with hummingbird feeders is ants, because once one drop hits the ground, the ants are going to find the feeder. Mm-hmm. And if the feeder's infested with ants or other insects, the hummingbirds are simply not going to use it. So those are the key things to remember. There's a lot of different hummingbird feeders on the market that are like a flat dish, and those type of feeders, you can dictate the nectar level so that the insects cannot reach it, but the hummingbirds can.
Okay. Lafayette, Indiana, line number 4. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for listening to my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the option to have a pileated woodpecker visit my feeder every year on its migratory path. thing.
I'm sorry, we're losing you. You're kind of breaking up on us.
Okay, it's a pileated woodpecker.
Yes.
And it's been in the area for the last 4 or 5 years. It stops in the spring, and then it stops again in the fall. When
okay.
It comes back through, and it's about 16 inches tall. It's magnificent, and it's right outside my window. I've got some great digital pictures of it.
Is he feeding on a suet feeder?
Pardon me?
Does he feed on the suet feeder, or what
yes,
type of feeder? Okay.
It's feeding on the suet.
Right, right.
And it announces its presence quite vocally when it shows up, so I know it's there, and I've been able to fortunately get some good pictures, so I just wanted to share that with you. It's,
yeah, and a lot of times
really
it's really
a thrill to see them.
Right, and a lot of times, and this is the case with all woodpecker species, not just the pileateds, but in the late spring going in throughout the summer, people do not see them as often on the feeders, and that simple reason is insects are very available, and they're hunting for them. Also, they're tending to nest and young, and so they're feeding that higher protein diet than what you're offering at your feeder. So
okay.
They switch off to that more. So,
okay. So maybe they're still in the area.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely in the area. If you're seeing him that many years in a row, they're nesting in the area. If you watch closely, you might even be seeing a male and a female or several different ones, not just the one. So if they're in the area, I can pretty much guarantee you that. But don't be discouraged when you don't see them during the summertime, because they've got bigger and better things to do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call.
And this is would this be the biggest woodpecker that you're likely to see?
Yes. Yes, around this area, definitely. That's the big guy. Typically, he's around the river systems is where we'll see them at. Becoming more and more common, more and more people are seeing them, it seems like. He would definitely have been the biggest one in the United States until the recent discovery, or supposable discovery.
Yeah, the ivory bill.
Of the ivory bill, so, which is still to be determined. So, but definitely in this area, he's the largest one.
All right. To another caller, and this will be someone in Champaign and line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Good morning. I have a situation, and I would like your thoughts on it. About two Sundays ago, I had the garage door up all day, and a pair of doves managed to nest in my garage. And not just anywhere in the garage. These two get the prize for originality. You know how your garage door goes up and there's a chain, and the garage door goes all the way back to a box that holds the motor and the light? And this dove nest is on top of the box.
Right.
With the motor in it.
Right.
And it only took them about 2 days to get used to the garage door going up and down.
Right.
And now he or she, do the females or the males sit on the nest?
Actually, on doves, they both do.
Okay.
They switch, let's see if I can remember this correctly. The male, I believe, is on during the daytime, the female at night.
Okay. during the day, I keep the garage door open about a foot from the bottom. At night, I close it about 11 o'clock at night and open it up about 7 in the morning. So far, they don't seem to mind. And I'm just wondering what I can expect and how do I keep this from repeating, because it's an interesting experiment once, but it's going to take some cleaning of the garage floor when this is all done.
Right. Well, the good thing is it's doves, so they're very, very quick on their nesting, their fledging. Everything goes very, very fast compared to other birds. So once the young have fledged out of the nest, which is usually about a two-week period after they've hatched, it's a very quick process.
Mm-hmm.
It could go as long as 3 weeks, just depending. But they're in an ideal environment, so they're going to grow very quickly, actually. So the elements are not a problem with them or anything. So you will see once they've fledged out, I would clean up your mess that they're going to leave behind, get rid of the nest structure, and keep your garage door closed. Because I can guarantee you the doves nest, they're one of the most prolific birds that we have around this area. They will nest quite a few times throughout the spring and summertime, and they will come back to that area. I can guarantee it.
All right.
Okay.
We'll give it a shot.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks. It seems to be one of those species that are not always real sharp in where it is they choose to nest.
Right. Yeah, and they don't. If you actually look at their nest, you can't even classify it as a nest. It's a few sticks placed there with eggs on top of it, and then they hope for the best.
Yeah.
But that's part of their being prolific is because they have such a high failure rate on their nests. But if you look at dove numbers, they're one of the highest populated birds in North America, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, it seems to be plenty of them around.
Right.
Those are the kind of the things that you'd regularly do.
Right.
See. All right. Decatur here, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard you talking about hawks a little while ago, and I thought you'd be interested. And for the last 10 years, up until last year, there's been a spot in Spiller Woods State Park where the Cooper's hawks would nest, and they have, and usually I expect them to arrive around the middle of April. And this year, I've been looking, you know, almost every day, and I had not seen until I figure that they finally have deserted this area.
It's possible. Cooper's hawks, their numbers are definitely on the increase. I've actually got a nesting pair in my neighborhood. A few doors down, there's been a nesting pair the last 3-4 years there. Their numbers are definitely up. I don't think that you're too late that they haven't nested yet. Most birds of prey, though, have started their nesting already, so it's still a possibility you still see them in their nesting again.
I have one other question. You talked about the scarcity of red-headed woodpeckers, and I was wondering what is the reason that has been put forward that seems to be most likely for the decline of that bird?
Most likely is the loss of habitat, the large wood tract areas, and the deadfalls. That's the biggest thing that right now that they're talking about. They're still doing a lot of research on them and their numbers, but there's been a definite notice and decline in areas throughout Illinois. It's not just in East Central Illinois. So everywhere from the forests in Southern Illinois all the way up. So that's what a lot of it's being pointed towards. I don't think all the evidence is in on it completely yet, though.
Well, this is about 10 years ago. I remember walking through Allerton Park and noting that it seemed that of all the woodpeckers, the redheaded was easily the commonest one that was observed on these trails. And that was about 10 years ago. And since then, I doubt that I've seen any more there than anyplace else.
Right. Yeah, their numbers, like I say, we've noticed that they've dropped off quite a bit over the last, I would say, probably 8 to 10 years they've been on a decline.
Well, they're a bird that is more likely to be found near an open place, even next to a road. And
right.
It's a bird that you're more likely to find dead due to having been hit by a car than any other woodpecker.
Yep, exactly. Thanks for the call.
All right, thank you. Other questions are welcome. We have maybe 7-8 minutes left in this part of Focus with Larry Keller of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. If you have questions about birds, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You know, it's something that I feel like this spring I have seen now in a little bit greater numbers than in the past, and it's not anything really exotic, but it's a blue jay. And I think that it's true, and I think this is something we've talked about before, that blue jay was one of the birds that was really hit by West Nile.
Right.
And the numbers were down. Are we starting to see some recovery in the blue jay population?
I think so, just off even observations that I've had myself and also with clients of ours. One thing that they've noticed on blue jays through research is they're very nomadic. You might have a whole clan of blue jays for 3 months, and then bang, and they're gone, and then you might get 3 or 4 back another month later. So they do move around a lot. And a lot of that probably is more likely is with food availability. So natural food was what we're talking about, not the stuff that we put out. But, yeah, you're exactly right. Blue jays did take a really hard hit a few years back with the West Nile, but their numbers, I think, are coming back.
Yeah. Next, let's talk with someone in Oakwood. And this is line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good.
Good. Well, it's that time of year for the annual war with the sparrows in my bluebird boxes.
Okay.
Any suggestions?
Persistence. That is the big thing. And this is a touchy subject for a lot of people because when we talk to people about having success rates with bluebirds, you have to kill the sparrows. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. That is public enemy number one when it comes to bluebird success rates. I've got many documentations of where if a male house sparrow catches the bluebird sitting on eggs, he will kill her. And they'll actually start to build their own nest on top of the dead body of the bluebird. So that's how vicious we're talking about an English sparrow or the house sparrow can be with the bluebirds. Some of the key things that you can try to do in certain areas, you might be able to lower the house to a level where the sparrows are not comfortable nesting, but the bluebirds still will. However, that creates another problem with other predation, such as raccoons and snakes. So you still have that area you have to cover. But with the sparrows, if you locate your houses in the more open areas, keep it away from outbuildings, keep it away from barns, houses, any place where there's people activity, because those are the areas that are going to attract the most number of house sparrows. So the more open area, the more isolated areas you can find, the more success rate you're going to have with the bluebirds.
Okay. I did have luck one year. This will sound kind of macabre, I know, but the glue traps for mice.
Right.
You've got an afternoon when you can go ahead and stay by the box to make sure a bluebird doesn't go in there.
Right.
That seemed to have done the trick.
Right. And the thing is with that is just what you said. You have to monitor it and be very careful with that. Another thing you can do is once the sparrows have established a nest, you can go in at nighttime, cover the hole, get the bird out of there, and dispose of him that way. There's a lot of ways to do it. Be persistent. And one big mistake that people do is they go in, they pull the sparrow nest out, and they throw it on the ground, walk away. Well, before you get back to your car, the sparrows are already using that same nesting material. So either take that nesting material, burn it right there, or throw it in a bag and throw it away, one or the other, because you want to make sure you make it as more difficult as you can for them. And also the male is the one you really want to try to get rid of because he's the one who's establishing that territory, and he's going to attract another female if you get rid of the female. So that's the one you want to try to get rid of.
Well, okie doke.
Okay.
Thank you much.
All right, thanks
thank
for the
you.
Call.
Bye-bye.
Champagne next, line number one. Hello.
I'd like to hear you talk about orioles.
Okay.
From here to just north of Milwaukee.
Okay. We get two species of orioles that will come through starting right now. That time frame, of course, up to Milwaukee is going to be a little further behind than us. But those orioles are going to come in. Typically, they travel at night, so the neotropicals are moving at night. So you want to have your feeders out and ready before they get here. One of the biggest mistakes we have is people will call up and say, hey, I just saw an oriole. They rush in, buy a feeder, go back home, and they never see him again.
Okay.
So what you want to do is have those feeders up early, and we usually tell people in East Central Illinois, by the last week of April, have the feeders up. That way you're ready to go. The orioles are going to drink sugar water like a hummingbird does. You can actually use a more diluted solution like a 6 or an 8 to 1. And also they love grape jelly. Don't use preserve or jam, but they are suckers for grape jelly. And then orange halves also. Now, there's a ton of different commercial feeders that are available on the market that have presentations for all three of those or one or the other. You want to put the feeders out in an area where it's very visible. The more orange color you have in your yard, the more you're going to attract orioles. So if you put your feeder out, take a piece of orange cloth and put next to the feeder, that's going to grab that bird's attention. And don't put the feeder under the tree to where it's going to be lost. The sight of that orange is going to be lost because the orioles are typically at the top of the tree, so you want to make sure that sight line down to the feeder is very visible for them to see it. Put them up close to your windows. That's one of the best places to put it because the trees are nearby. They're going to see it. They will come right down to the house. Matter of fact, we were talking earlier that I've got a picture at the store there. A lady took last Friday in downtown Champaign. She's got an oriole feeder hanging out of her den window, and there's a male Baltimore oriole sitting there. So yeah. We get the orchard orioles and the Baltimore orioles. The most common one is the northern or the Baltimore oriole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you do see them showing up, you can put nesting material out for them also. Try to encourage the female to nest. That way you'll have them all summer long. You'll keep a pair there.
That sounds really good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thank
but you want to make sure you do that right now. That's the key.
There
okay.
you go.
Okay.
Thank you. And we'll try to get at least one more caller. Somebody's on the road here on I-57, line 2. Hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. Great show. I'm calling. I live in Tinley Park, and this year we saw an Arctic owl, or a snow owl.
Snowy owl. Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how far south do they typically come?
We, depending on the winter, they will come all the way down into central Illinois. We've had many sightings of them throughout the years in Champaign, McLean County, Vermilion County. But they will come down this far depending on what the winter weather is doing.
Okay. Very good. Now, if I can ask you one quick question also. As I drive, of course, I see the buzzard, we'll say, hawk. Why do the birds go after the hawk? You'll see a hawk flying up. You'll see two or three birds around them,
right,
pecking on them. Now, I've heard people say, oh, well, they're pulling insects off to eat, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yeah, that's an old wives' tale.
Yeah,
that's simply what I
kind of thought that because he didn't look real happy.
Right. What we simply have there is we have a prey-predator situation. The hawk is the predator. Everybody, through a mob action, can chase that predator out of the territory. So this time of year, for example, you'll see the red-winged blackbirds will just give holy heck to a red-tailed hawk flying over. Even though that hawk has no intention of coming down to feed on them, their young, or their nest, but they will gang up on him and run him out of the territory, and that is simply because that is a predator, and they do not want that predator in that area.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you. And we'll do one more. And Terre Haute is the caller. Line 3. Hello.
Yes, I got a question. I've seen what looks like a peregrine falcon in the area, and it's like, it can't be around here, can it?
Sure, it can. During migration periods in spring and fall, the peregrine falcons can show up just about anywhere, especially in city dwellings. Last fall, I've watched a peregrine falcon in downtown Champaign feed on as many pigeons as he possibly could. So, yeah, during the migration periods, you can definitely see peregrine falcons. Their numbers are starting to come back, and they're becoming more and more common to see.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Well, we are just about to the point where we're going to have to finish up. Any last little bit of advice you'd like to give to people?
Grab the binoculars, grab the field guide, and head out. That's the big thing. Right now, these next 2 weeks will be the key push coming through. And get out and enjoy it. Look up in the trees, especially the warblers. You're not going to see them at the feeders, so you get out and search for them.
Yeah, you got to be looking. But if you are looking, you're going to
see some amazing colors.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Larry Keller, he's the owner of Wild Birds Incorporated in Champaign. And every once in a while, particularly when the birds are really active, he comes in and we talk about birds and have a good time.